And on that note, welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig.
And this is Tony.
And we're at YAR 2014 in Brisbane. And joining us here on the show is Simon Brown. How are you doing, Simon?
Hello, yeah, good, thank you.
So, Simon, we've just been in your talk about Agile architecture. Before we get into all that kind of stuff, who the heck is Simon Brown?
Who the heck is Simon Brown? So I'm an independent consultant, live in a tiny place called Jersey in the Channel Islands. Life history is basically born there, went to school there, ends up going to university in England, met a girl, worked in London for 12 years, moved back 6 years ago. And I guess for the past few years, I've really been jetting around the world, helping teams understand architecture and agility and how they can blend both approaches.
So is your background enterprise architecture?
It's not enterprise architecture. That's like a whole different, scary sort of thing. So my background is actually building systems, predominantly in Java, bit in .NET, but mostly for the finance industry. So I did a lot of work building software for banks through consulting companies in London.
Excellent stuff. I really enjoyed the talk.
Thank you.
Firstly, one of the things I really loved about it was you hit on something that we've talked a lot about. And in fact, when we had Alistair Coburn, we actually asked the same question, which was really interesting. It is, throw the documentation away.
Right.
We're agile. And they all seem to forget to read the little line down the bottom.
Yeah.
So you see that a lot?
I do see that a lot. I kind of jokingly go into organizations to say, you know, you're agile, I bet you've got no documentation. They go, yeah, we haven't actually. So really? So we have to go through this whole process of, you know, is it important to document software? And they will go, yes. Why? Because of a bunch of reasons. Right, so why don't you do it? We don't have time is the common answer. So this is why I'm a big fan of, I like a lot of the software architecture document stuff, but I spin it a different way. And I think about creating a software guidebook. So basically a way to explain and navigate a complex code base, a complex system. So it's very lightweight, and it factors in some of the diagramming stuff you would have seen in my talk.
Yes, yeah. I, as an old, old I guess is the word now, I hate to think of myself as that, as an old BA that sort of grew up through the web environment, much as Craig did, we were back in the early. I did a lot of the old UML for oops and so on. Yeah,
yeah, me
so
too.
To hear you talk about that, it was like sent shutters down my spine. So it was very interesting to see your take, because I was thinking, where's this going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've also done a lot of UML. About 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it was fairly popular, and a lot of teams I worked on were doing a lot of UML. So one project in particular, we basically drew UML diagrams for 6 months. Right, that's it. We wrote no code, just pictures. Interesting business domain, but we delivered zero code, and the project was eventually cancelled for some reason.
Wow.
I have no reason why.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the interesting thing, and I know I was lucky enough to sit in a portion of your workshop last week, and unfortunately the bit that taught me how to do the old stuff, not the new stuff, but anyway. But it's all pens and paper, so
right.
which is really in the spirit of, as agile coaches, we want to keep it think simple.
Yeah.
So how do people react to that? Because a lot of architects that I kind of run into, if it's not in Visio, it's not proper.
Yeah, so we do occasionally get that. I guess where I'm coming from this is basically, if you can't at least draw something, if you can't sketch out your architecture, then you don't understand what you've got, or you don't understand what you're trying to build. So that's why we actually force people to use pens and paper in the workshop. They can use whiteboards if they want to, but it's the same thing. And it just kind of frees you from all the nastiness of Visio and lining boxes up and overlapping lines and all that stuff. And it's just about, forget the notation for a second, but do you understand what a software system is, right? How do you construct a software system? And this is how I have my model, which says a software system is made up of a bunch of containers, web apps and database and file systems all interacting. And then you can do a decomposition into the lower level. So it's really about teaching the abstractions. And then we say, well, how do you draw that? Well, drawing is easy. Annotate your arrows. Put extra stuff in your boxes to represent responsibilities. If you're going to use color, explain the different dashed and dotted lines, and that's it really.
So your model is C4 model, and is explained in your book, which we'll talk about in a moment. How did this all come about, though? You've been working writing JavaScript. This is one day you woke up in the morning and went, no more of this rubbish. I need to get this diagram. And then there must be something. What's the story?
So. I worked for small consulting companies in London, and the way you scale consulting companies is to create more development teams. And to run more development teams, you need more architects. So basically, I was one of the people in the organization who would help other developers kind of move into an architecture role. And we were only doing that on an ad hoc basis internally. And we eventually took that out and span it off to a one-day workshop that we ran at conferences, and it kind of grew from there. And when I put the book together, and in fact, the initial version of my two-day workshop, it actually didn't have much around the diagramming stuff that you saw in the talk today. And I kind of picked up on this fact that people were drawing pictures that didn't really make sense, and I thought, well, how would I do this? And I've always approached diagrams from a very kind of software development point of view, from a very technology-focused point of view, as opposed to, you know, top-down concepts and modules and logical views. And really, I just thought, well, how can I take this approach and make it a bit more generic so it really fits into basically my workshop? And then it's just kind of grown and slightly morphed and evolved from there.
Mm. Kind of been a bit of a whirlwind, really. It's like from almost nowhere to stardom. I mean, I can't remember what I sort of...
I'm not sure I'd say stardom, but...
I sort of look at it that if I know people are talking about it in the community, it's obviously touched a nerve. And I think the reason that it is like that is that no one's really talking about this stuff. I mean, you can pick up 1,000 books on how to do better story cards or how to do estimation or those type of things, but architecture is one of those... There's very few people even walking around talking about it.
Yeah, and that's weird, right?
Well, I think it is weird because it's interesting as agile coaches. I think it's something that we've chatted before, and I often talk about the architects. I give them a hard time.
Yeah.
Because we have a puppet character here called Mr. Squiggle, right? And Mr. Squiggle gets a bunch of squiggles and he's asked to make something out of it. And I always call him Mr. Squiggle because a lot of them, they go off and they write all these little diagrams and stuff, and then the poor old techies are left to sort of interpret it, right? So one of the things that really annoys me in the architecture space is it's secret men's business, if you like, or secret ladies' business if they're involved. But, you know, there's that little handshake, you know, kick the foot out, whatever it be, and then the poor old devs are left to sort of interpret this stuff, whereas really it should be in the spirit of the whole thing, should be that whole collaborative approach. And that struck me in there.
Yeah.
Was one of the things that ticked my box, is that you were talking about it from way to go.
Yeah, so I've also been on the receiving end of diagrams from architects, and at times you think, I must be stupid because I don't understand these diagrams, because it's all, you know, fluffy concepts and modules and big arrows and so, well,
does a zero mean zero is a one?
yeah. And so, well, I've got a bunch of code and I've got a diagram and I don't get it. I don't get what the mapping is. And that's why, as I said, I approach this from a kind of bottom-up perspective almost. You know, technology is important.
Well, even sitting in your workshop, we were having a massive argument at our table because someone tried to draw a dependency diagram that, to me, didn't illustrate dependencies. And so right. Half the arrows pointing one way and part... It's a dependency diagram. That's good, except for that box over there. In that case...
Yeah. The workshop's really fun because at the start of the workshop, and you probably saw this, everybody's kind of sitting there confidently going, yeah, we know how to do this. It's just a bunch of pictures to represent the software. And then 5, 10, 15 minutes later, it's like, oh... We don't know how to do this because we don't do this at work. We've never done this before.
Yeah, I think the criticality of the whole issue for me too is that a lot of the architects have actually been drawing pictures for so long.
Yeah.
They've actually forgotten what it's like to have the hands in the mix.
Well, drawing complicated pictures, I mean, one of the things is that you point out is, you know, you get people raise their hands, how many are doing UML, and that's, you know, it's a very small number.
It was like 7 out of 250 or something. Yeah, yeah. It's a tiny percentage. And that's, if I find myself on Teams now, I am normally the person who knows UML. And I've got two choices. Do I introduce UML and teach people, or do we just do something simple?
Mm.
I go for the simple. Yeah.
And it's interesting, I think the thing that I hadn't really thought about, because I normally just do draw boxes and diagrams, is that it is the only notation we've got. I mean, there are things like, you know, business process modelling and those sort of things, but actually pure technical architecture.
Yeah.
And we all understand how to draw a cylinder for a database and a couple of arrows, but, you know, past that, you know, I'm not sure file, how do I represent that? It could be one of the different ways.
You could have Visio, right?
At the moment, yeah. So, or OmniGraph on the map. But as I said, I'm trying to create a diagramming tool so we don't have to mess around dragging boxes around. You know, it's 2014, why are we still manually drawing these pictures?
So how often, I'm not sure if this is something that came up in your talk, but one of the things traditionally that's happened is we always do this this big upfront architecture, and obviously, you know, rightly so, in agile teams, we've fought against this. But people or teams you've worked with where you use this more lightweight approach, how often do they go back and update the diagrams? I mean, it's something you should be doing every story card that affects it. Get the whole team and update it.
Yeah, and that's exactly my advice. If you have a definition done for your story or your feature, just add another tick box, have I updated the diagrams? And then it's a 30-second change. Rather than someone like me sitting down for 3 weeks at the end of the project trying to accumulate all of this stuff and figure out what we've got.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us more about the tool. I think our listeners, because obviously they weren't in the talk, so this is your opportunity to tell them about it as well.
So the tool is a company called Structurizer, and it's basically what I call software architecture as code. So I walk through my C4 model, which describes a set of abstractions and really a way to think about a software system. And what I have currently is a set of Java code. It's a really simple Java library that recreates essentially a set of domain classes to create that C4 model. And it's basically about wiring different things together. And part of this is really, it's a way to reach into the code and extract, you know, using static code analysis, extract the concepts that we're interested in from an architecture point of view. So the example I give is if you're using something like Spring MVC, you can annotate your Java classes to represent whether they are a web app controller or a data access object. Right, so I'm using that as my key here. So I'm pulling out those things and making them my components. You know, sure, most apps have many, many other classes, but I'm not interested in those. I'm just interested in these significant structural elements. So that's really creating an architecture model. And if you can extract a bunch of that stuff from the code, you know, whether it's annotations or .NET attributes or just naming strategies and package structures, you can then have a model that you can do stuff with. And you can plug it into your build pipeline and your CI environment, and you can keep the model up to date. So that's part of it. And there's a web app I've created at structurizer.com. That's Structurizer with a Z and no E, because it's hipster or something. And it's basically, at the moment, you have to paste in a JSON representation of this model. Eventually, there'll be a nice automated API. But basically, it's a diagramming tool that allows you to move boxes around a canvas. That's it. You can't modify the boxes. It's just moving stuff around to get a layout that you like.
Is there intention to commercialize it? Or?
So the library is going to stay open source. And there's a guy in Perth, Mike Minatello, who's ported it to C Sharp. I met him last week, I think it was, when I was in Perth. The diagramming tool, not sure yet. I could either open source it or commercialize it, but one of those.
Watch this space.
Yeah, watch the space, definitely.
So if we get back to those who haven't seen the talk or read the book yet, the actual C4 model, it's about going down in layers and each, I guess, going to lower component levels as you move down. So can you briefly explain the four levels?
Yeah, so the top level is really, you know, your software system. So what is your software system? Who uses it? So what are your users, actors, personas? And how does it fit into the rest of the world? So in other words, what are your key system dependencies? So this is things like your email server, your Active Directory server, you know, those legacy systems you have to integrate with, whatever. So that's the top level.
That's the top level. You know, you can throw that in front of a manager or point at your boss and they can read that.
Yeah, so it's a system context diagram. It's got names of systems. There's no tech details on there at all. And you can annotate the arrows with responsibilities and, you know, summarizing what users do and that sort of stuff. So it's a really nice, simple diagram. You then kind of open up the system and you show the containers inside it. So this is really, you know, my system is made up of a mobile app talking to a web app with JSON that talks to a middle tier server, throws data in a Mongo database and a Redis database and MySQL and all that stuff. So basically it's showing the execution environments. The places where you can run code and where you can store data. And it's not talking about physical deployments and clustering and archiving backups and resilience. That's a separate deployment view. So really it's just showing you the kind of high level shape of the technologies they're using. That's the containers view, number two, and then you kind of zoom into each interesting container, and you don't have to do this for all of them, and you show the components inside it. And basically this is how you decompose your mobile app, your web app into modules, components, layers, whatever. If you're using microservices, your microservices will basically be a container on the containers diagram. So if you imagine one microservices is one execution context, then you do a system context diagram, a containers diagram showing your microservices, and then you stop because there's no other interesting information to show.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I heard you talk about microservices in there. So microservices, the devil or the detail?
I like microservices. I fear a lot of people jumping them because of fashion. And as I said in my talk, people will find it hard to build a structured modular monolith. And if they can't do that, if they don't have the design thinking that allows them to create a set of modules or components or, you know, nice boundaries of stuff with a nice clean contracted interface, microservices won't help, because you get forced into doing that, right? So the design thinking is the same. So what I'm trying to do is force people through that initial early high-level design thinking to do a nice little decomposition and then stopping. And whether that's components in a monolith or separate microservices, it's kind of all the same.
And I guess it probably helps if you're at the start of a project designing system out, if you are focused on microservices, you know, if you're starting to go to lower levels, well then you know something's probably gone wrong. And on the same token, you can find the bits that maybe lend themselves to being microserviced, if that's a word, or not, right?
Yeah, and of course you can have a hybrid approach. So sometimes we see microservice solutions during our workshop. And then when we're having discussions, you can see they've decomposed their solution, and it's only a tiny solution, into like 20 or 30 services. And when you start having conversations and say, well, why is this thing separate to this thing? You know, if you merge them, you get some additional benefits. So there's a hybrid approach of some monoliths talking to some microservices and vice versa. Monolith is a dirty word, but it shouldn't be. It just means a bigger block of stuff that does, you know, more than one thing.
Yeah, and I think that's the concern for me, because microservices is the thing.
Yep.
I'm doing the rabbit ears, anyone can see me. I forget I'm not, you can't see me. It is the thing of the moment is that you know, monolith has become this thing where we have to get rid of it. We have to move to microservices. And, you know, we're going to end up, like you said, I think the thing you said in there was it's going to be a consultant's dream shortly.
Yep. So a friend of mine, Rob Annette, wrote a blog post on my website, codingthearchitects.com, about monolith and what the word monolith actually means. And he looks at it from different perspectives, you know, a deployment monolith versus a code monolith and that sort of thing. So that's worth people going to check out.
So this whole model is all about system architecture. So for those people that do have an E in their title, how does this apply? I mean, I assume you could take this model out to, you know, I mean, lots of these high-level component diagrams could make up your enterprise architecture, I guess.
So the simple, quick version of the story is I don't really have much to offer enterprise architects. If you take this, so the C4 model is a drill down per system, right? And it starts with the system context and works down to detail. If you wanted to map out an enterprise from a technology or a system point of view, you could go up one level and create like an enterprise context map of all your systems and who owns them and who owns data and how they relate. So that's as far as my story goes. It doesn't cover people, process, and all that sort of stuff.
Have you seen anybody do that at an enterprise level with the model?
No, but things like Archimate will allow EAs to model processes and that kind of thing. And I don't see a lot of people using Archimate, but I do see people using it for modeling processes and things.
Okay. So enterprise architecture, do we need it?
Yes. Yeah.
That's a controversial one, I know, but
I guess it depends what you mean by enterprise architecture. So when people say enterprise architecture, they are sometimes referring to that central group of architects who dictates technology policies and design principles, and they don't write code. And for others, enterprise architecture is the very kind of high-level, visionary, strategic view of an organization, people, process, technology, you know, chief technology officers, that sort of thing. The latter is important. And actually, the form is important. If you've got lots of stuff and, you know, you want to save money on licensing and you want some consistency, maybe having a set of centralized design principles is a way to go. I'm not sure about having a centralized architecture group made up of people who aren't involved in the day-to-day projects and teams. So one of the options I normally recommend to people is, if you want that centralized view of architecture, get your architects to form that group. Right, and have it as a floating group, and then they can see what's going on, and they're involved in the day-to-day detail.
Right answer. No, sorry.
Yeah.
That's the one where the reason I asked that question, I know it's controversial, is because a lot of people do say, you know, once they start to get into the agile momentum, and again, it's another thing I refer to in your talk, is the management says, we're going agile.
Yep.
The first thing they tend to do is jettison the architects, right?
And then and that includes the software architects.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they find themselves in a world of hurt. But then what I find is they go the other way around and we end up with this huge architectural group that's right. controlling and puppeting everything. So whereas the preference is to have them within the streams and the teams and then have them as a chapter or guild or whatever you want right, to use yeah, those
yeah.
buzzwords.
Yeah, but, as like a little travelling group to advise and consult, which is yeah. Some of the Microsoft talks I've been to, I think it was the real estate guys, they were talking about having a delivery engineering team. And they don't dictate standards. It's kind of like a centralised R&D function that publishes advice and guidance and best practice. So it's kind of you can follow it or not follow it.
Yeah, because I think that's an issue that faces to many, many teams. Because I guess that Spotify matrix model is the thing at the moment as well, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of, which has been around for a long time, but it's getting a lot more premise because a lot of it makes sense. However, once you move to that model, you lose that interaction where a group of those like-minded sort
right.
of people sit together and the standards and the premises that they would use.
So it's the overlapping of the tribes that's missing.
Correct.
Yeah.
So if you had to define in an agile team the role definition of a good architect, what should a good architect do? Do we put an architect into a team or do we have good coders who do architecture?
Yes.
Good answer.
Yeah.
So we all agree that architects should be able to code.
Yeah, yeah. So my website's called Coding the Architecture, kind of, you know, guess why. It depends on what team you have. If I'm working with, so let's take me as an example. If I'm working with a team who are new and experienced, and perhaps they need a little more guidance, then I will be the architect. And I will tend to, you know, lead from the front and set a direction. And maybe try to be a bit more prescriptive about guidelines and principles. If I'm working with a team of rock stars, me standing up at the front and saying I'm the architect is not going to work, right? It's not going to get them motivated. And yeah, you've got a body of experience to work with there. So this is where we can start sharing the role out. And that's why I mentioned Roy Oshiro's elastic leadership thing. He talks about the Scrum Master role. On new teams, having a one Scrum Master driving the process works really well. Experienced teams, you can select anybody you want to, you know, change it, rotate it every other day if you want to. And there's a kind of mid-ground there, and it's about pushing people to be more collaborative. So my starting point is me as an architect, and then I'll try to get at least one other person involved. You know, removes the bus factor, essentially.
Excellent. So one of the things I see a problem with, we see it with Scrum Masters, and we see some of those ubiquitous roles that are, is that when you have these organisations, the middle management layer or the frozen middle layer, as we tend to call it, they don't know what to do with architects, right? So a lot of the training courses that we see or we hear about are about training the architects what to do or about the standards or about how you do the architecture, right? But the one of the missing loops that I see there is somewhere in this mix is teaching the organisation how to use the architects or what to do with the architects. Do you see a space for that?
Yeah, here's a nice experiment for you guys to do. Next time you go into an organization as an agile coach, ask the people you're working with, you know, do you understand what software developer is? And they'll go, yeah, of course we do. Ask them what a Scrum Master does. Ask them what a product owner does. And they'll be able to recite, you know, what the role's all about. Ask them what an architect is and what an architect does, and you'll get lots and lots of conflicting answers. And then take that step further. Say, right, so your organization has architects. Is there a terms of reference? Is there a piece of paper you can show me that explains what your role is? And this isn't the you must be able to communicate with other people, you must be able to lead teams and all the fluffy stuff, right? That's important, but that's not what I'm talking about. It's really, is there a piece of paper that says, as an architect, I expect you to do these things, right? Tech leadership, quality assurance, evolving the architecture, keeping an eye on it, that sort of thing. You'll be surprised, no one has one.
No, I agree with you. That's why I was asking the question. And I don't see that anybody really has any type of training or any emphasis to teach the management layers how to best use the architects,
right.
which seems to be a gap to me. So if anybody's thinking about it, there's something to do.
Yeah. So I often do workshops with companies, and then in the evening I'll do like a half-hour bridge version of the course for the management to say, this is what I'm teaching your teams, and this is where architects fit into your organisation.
How do they react to that training? Generally
good, actually.
Is it because you find they didn't actually understand what architecture was in the first place?
It's normally that they didn't understand what architecture is, but also they can probably see issues, right? They can see that the team is moving slower than they think they should be, or they're having those outages, or they know they've got performance issues or scaling issues. And sometimes they realize that there's something missing and they can't quite put their finger on what it is. And often it's you know, let's get some tech leadership. And that's, you know, when I say software architect, you can substitute the word tech leader if you want to. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the times in my experience is they don't understand what it offers them.
Yeah, yeah.
They just see it as a role that they're paying that extra dollar for, but they don't understand what it's actually giving them. And right. I think it's once you can tell them what the value is, that makes a big difference.
Yeah. You could always ask them, if you were having a house built, would you do it without an architect, and see what they say?
It depends on top of house, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's exactly
yeah.
the same with a software.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
if we're going to go and build a tent mm-hmm. and live in it,
then no problem at all. We'll just get some builders and off you go.
That's it.
If you want to build a skyscraper, yeah, we want to think about that.
Actually, I think you just hit the nail on the head for me there when you said that architect and tech leadership are kind of synonymous. And I didn't want to let that go past. It worries me sometimes that I do see tech leads who don't believe that architecture is part of their role.
Right.
Is that something you see in your travels?
Yep. You get a bunch of terms that are mostly used interchangeably. So a developer lead, leads developer, tech lead, architect. I've seen some other weird ones as well, technical team lead and technical project manager. And there seems to be... So on the one hand, you've got kind of the lead developer role, which is kind of looking inwards, looking after the team, doing all the coaching, mentoring, looking at people's code, whatever. And then you've got the other role, which is what I call the architect role, the, you know, the tech lead role. And it's really making sure we're delivering a system that meets all the goals, all the non-functional goals, looking at, you know, quality from a high-level perspective, setting a direction, a roadmap, all that sort of stuff. And for me, those are two separate roles. And, you know, you can be the best coder in the world and the worst architect, and vice versa. So when I'm on a team, I'm normally not the best coder, but I know how to step back and take a holistic view of what we're building and make sure we're factoring in the stuff we need to factor in. And that's really the key difference between the roles.
Excellent.
So if people want to know more about you, where do they find out more information?
So the easiest thing is to go to simonbrown.je. Believe it or not, Jersey does have its own domain name. It's very expensive, but it does have its own domain name. Or codingthearchitecture.com.
And the book, the name of the book?
Name of the book is Software Architecture for Developers. And it's available on LeanPub as an ebook. And there's a Chinese translation, in case any of your listeners are Chinese.
Excellent. So hopefully we'll see more translations and get in the hands of even more people throughout time.
Me too.
Well, it's been great meeting you, and thanks for coming out to Yap.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much, Tom. It's been excellent having you on the podcast.
We've got one last thing to say, Tony.
Yeah. Viva la revolution.
Brilliant.